So, with meditation, as with life, in a way, the first challenge is to allow the fullness of our experience to emerge. To allow the fullness of our mind, our body, process. So that means the full emotional experience, the full mental experience, the full physical experience, the full breath experience. To allow what's arising to arise. So when we sit for meditation, that's the opportunity that we have to allow the experiences that are here to fully represent themselves, to fully emerge, so that we can begin to see the nature of what's happening. Okay? So to see the nature of what's happening, you know, means to see the actual truth of what's happening. The truth of what's happening is the same for all of us. Okay? So I was in Arizona this past week teaching the Dharma, teaching some therapy work, interface Dharma and therapy, as I often like to do. And we were talking about truth. And we're talking about, okay, so one fellow goes, well, I know when you talk about the truth, there's sort of your truth, there's my truth, there's his truth, there's their truth, there's these different truths. And I said, yes. Okay, that's the truth that's interpreted. So we get different truths amongst humans that are interpreted. But there are truths that are collectively real or true. Okay? So when we sit in meditation, the truth about the nature of experience is that whatever arises, okay, whatever comes up, if it's allowed to come up fully, it can show itself fully. And in showing itself fully, eventually everything that comes up will disappear. Now, how often do we see this? In a really clear way. Because if we see this in a really clear way, we move past the content, which means the story that we have in our mind about our life, about the world, about people. We move past that story into what's called the nature of experience, or the process level of insight. In order for that process level to be seen, to be recognized or realized, we need to cultivate the capacity, and we all have this capacity, to fully open to our experience. In a certain sense, to get out of the way, to not interfere, and let experience emerge. So we can start with something as simple as breathing, and we can learn to let the natural breath happen. But we don't interfere with it, we just let it arise and we let it pass. Okay, eventually we can do that with at least parts of the body. We may have experienced this tonight. Parts of the body were being allowed to be just as they are. Not interfered with, not resisted, not grasped onto, but just allowed to be as they are. Okay, eventually that can happen with the whole body. And then the mind, what we often call the mind, we associate, because we've been conditioned to do this, to our heads, to our brain mind. So if we stick with that for a moment, what we're talking about is being able to allow the fullness of our thoughts, to not interrupt the thinking process, to not truncate it. Okay, and how does the thinking process, emotional process, physical process, how does it get truncated? When it's judged. When it's disallowed. Okay, that will truncate the natural flow of experience. Human beings are happiest, just like nature. Nature is happiest when it's allowed to flow freely. If you could look at the stream, perhaps you have to imagine this a little bit, but the stream is happiest when it's allowed to flow freely. Okay, when it's not obstructed. If the stream had a happiness, maybe it does. We do, We're happiest when the flow of our life is unobstructed. When nothing seems to be in the way. And who's in the way most? Me. I'm in the way most. Okay. So sometimes we want to clear some space for ourselves in our world. You know, we want to clear a day or clear our house a little bit, get things settled, get things cleaned up, so that we ourselves can feel clear and settled. You know that feeling? Getting something cleaned out, you know, maybe just the bathroom, if you're a bathroom cleaner. Get the bathroom nice and orderly, and it's like, ah, yes, even smells good. Hmm. And sometimes we can rest a little bit after that, can't we? Well, some of us don't need that. We can have a lot of clutter all around, and we can still go, ooh, we can really settle. We don't get cluttered because our environment is cluttered. Okay, we're a little bit different in that. We call that subjective truth there. That's sort of how you view your environment as a hindrance or an aid to your own composure. If you don't find composure yourself in your life, who's going to find that for you? Can you buy composure over the internet? Can you buy composure from a magazine? Can you get composure from the television program? You can get a little bit if you watch certain things, like a nature program maybe. Okay. And there's some beautiful scenery, some beautiful music, maybe some even warming, soothing narration. You might feel, ah, yes, there's a flow. And you participate in that a little bit, and you get a little bit of a contact off of that. We've all done this. What we're talking about is when you begin to develop this composure here within this, which you sometimes, most of us do until we don't, call yourself. It's me. Okay? When you begin to develop composure in here, that composure comes about in part because you're allowing your experience to flow. The nature of experience, actually, all experiences, is lucidity. And that lucidity, when that lucidity, it really kind of opens out or opens up, it becomes luminous. So you might ask somebody who is actually sitting in, you know, some composure of lucidity, and you ask them how you feel, and they might say, I feel a certain luminosity. It doesn't mean you're floating necessarily, but that this is truly opened up. Okay, now just for a moment, notice where this that you call yourself is open right now. Just check that out. Don't have to go back into formal meditation or close your eyes, but just notice the arms maybe. Maybe some of the legs. For some of us maybe through here, through here, through here. And for some of us perhaps the whole thing feels pretty composed, settled, and lucid. Okay. Now, there's four states that we keep moving through the course of our life. Deep sleep, dream, the waking state, which now we'll pluralize that, the waking states, we should probably say the dream states, and believe it or not, deep sleep state isn't a singular state, it's a multiplicity of states. And the fourth is witnessing. All meditation, including concentration, which is not the same word as meditation. Concentration happens inside meditation sometimes, where you get the mind get concentrated on something like the breathing, and other things seem to fall away. This relative one-pointedness feels good, comes and it goes. Okay. Concentration, think of it like this, happens inside a much bigger, actually boundless space. I'm drawing a circle right out here. This is if there's an edge. There's really no edge. But for now, we'll just say concentration is something that happens inside a bigger space, which is called meditation. Okay? Meditation starts out for some people as a certain set of experiences, like getting peaceful, concentrated, you know, feeling relaxed, composed, and eventually that opens out into your life as meditation. There's nothing that's happening here in the field of your life experience that isn't the meditation. Why? Why? because life, as we know it, at the fundamental base for all of us, is awareness. And in that field, awareness is not a point, nor is it a process. That field of awareness has within it everything that's happening. Now, the lucidity or luminosity can happen at a breath level, so to speak, because there's awareness of breathing, the breath is being allowed, and pretty soon, boom, there's a fluidity that opens, and there's an ease, there's a comfort, there's a happiness, a certain amount of peace. It's all transitory, it all comes and goes, but it feels very good, similar to the body. The body can become composed, can feel equanimous, that means balanced. That means there's no struggle here. Okay? No struggle. And then the most subtle level in the interior is the mind itself and all the different ways the mind's working. So here we have mind states, we have emotions. Okay, and this is for human beings where we often, if the body's working pretty good, okay, and the thinking's not too disturbed, where do we have problems? Where do we have difficulty? We have difficulty in the area of our emotions. We have difficulty in how we feel about things, how we feel about ourselves, other people, and so forth. So these emotional areas need attention. And some of these emotional areas are rooted in the so-called past. Things have happened. I'm unresolved about those things, and I have some emotional unfinished business. I have emotional unfinished business sometimes with other people, sometimes with things that I've done, sometimes with things that I haven't done. And so all of this needs care and attention. If we're truly to awaken, yeah, to our true potential, or you could say what we truly are, we need to see, relatively speaking, what we are. We need to see it, and we need to see it clearly. We need to see it without bias, without prejudice, and without interference. This is an act of love. This is an act of love. Awareness is by nature sublimely and subtly, non-excitedly loving. So in a way, this is why for most of us a discipline is needed. Because if we're not disciplined in developing the composure, in developing the settledness, then we can't know ourselves. We can't see ourselves clearly. We'll be distracted, we'll be pulled by different forces. Things will come up, we'll have difficulty handling them, we might repress it. We might even act it out, we might blame others. You see, this complicates the experience of being a human being. Can we make a story about that? We make a story about that. If you're a good story maker about that, then you write poetry about that and it loosens you up because you write a poem about your situation. You know, or you write in your journal. We've all had diaries maybe or journals at times where we write about our experience, and somehow writing that on the paper loosens the experience up. Somehow we feel a little bit different, a lot different, sometimes even relieved. Well, okay, I took care of that. We didn't say the words to anybody else. And then, of course, there are times when we find ourselves wanting and needing to talk about our experience. Talk about what it's like to be experiencing oneself, one's life, the challenge, the difficulty, or to share an insight. I don't want to keep it to myself. I want to share it with other people. I want to tell other people what I'm learning. I want to hear what other people are learning. I want to be enriched by that. I want to be in that exchange, in that community. So with the meditation, and I'm attempting here to make it very clear that meditation is much more than just a formal practice. Like, we spent about 50 minutes. I was a little bit late, so I had less than 50. But many of you had about 50 minutes of what sometimes is called formal meditation, where you sit in a posture that you hopefully can maintain with relative little or at times no movement, not because you're holding yourself stiff, but because you're relaxing into seeing what's happening here. And that's very powerful. It's very powerful as a discipline. It's very healthy at all levels of the mind, the body. Because we're not going to know what we are in a more sublime or spiritual sense until we can really know what we are in a physical, emotional, and mental sense. Because what we are spiritually is more subtle. It's more difficult to see. And no concept, no idea, no book is going to necessarily give you that kind of awakening or realization of what you are, essentially or spiritually. So the very practicality of this means that if there's an inclination to formulate a discipline, what kind of discipline might that be? And for some people, the discipline is one of sitting meditation. They might blend it with something more specific for the body, like a yoga or a tai chi, a qigong type discipline. It's like how get your act together, Paul. Get your act together. How is your act not together? And I don't mean the act of, necessarily what you're going to do for a job, although that's a piece of getting your act together. Get your act together in the sense that you begin to really have a channel to know yourself. And what is the channel to know yourself? To learn to witness experience without conceptualizing a witness. Because there is no witness. There's witnessing, but there's no witness. Can't find the witness. But witnessing is happening right now. Witnessing is how awareness works. Awareness spontaneously. Ooh, that's an interesting sound. Spontaneously is witnessing. Is that a refrigerator?
Yeah, that's the water going into the ice maker.
Oh, the ice maker, okay. I thought maybe gas was being released into the tube or something. Just crossed some dangerous boundary into some territory with it.
That's been happening for 20 years.
And I never got it. You see, awareness works. The other thing that happens is that you begin to really see for yourself that the real surprise party is every moment. That you don't necessarily have to go to a formalized surprise party. That the surprise party is that every moment is original. Every moment is fresh. Every moment is new. That's a kind of enlightenment. It's a kind of enlightenment, a relative enlightenment. So the sitting is just one aspect of the, you could call it discipline. Cultures a capacity to be aware through all the other activities of life. Whether the body's moving, eating, and all the other things we do with the body. We begin to experience that the field of awareness, if you prefer the word process, I don't prefer that, but some people like that word, or the flow of awareness, is ongoing, it's unstoppable. You can try not to be aware, and it will conflict the flow. But if you just notice how awareness just is spontaneously here, okay, and its nature is to witness. As that witnessing deepens into the other three great states, okay, the waking state, or states, is the place where most people spend most of the time observing, because when they get into the horizontal posture, and dreams are coming and going, and deep sleep is coming and going, there's an interplay there. Sometimes there's very broken up awareness. It's just recognize what's happening, and then it's gone, deep sleep, and then recognition there's a dream. Okay, but just consider this, the witnessing, the expression or the nature of awareness, okay, is what carries us home. And home is where we are. It's not a place, it's not a particular experience, it's not a feeling. It's not a state. Home is witnessing. And there's no direction to that. It's here. Here isn't a direction. See this? Here isn't a direction. There's not a direction to here. You can't arrive at here unless you think you're not here. This happens to people. And then they work at getting back into being here. That's what people sometimes call becoming present. I wasn't present. I was spaced out. I forgot. And now I'm remembering. I'm back in the driver's seat. No, you're not in the driver's seat. You think you're in the driver's seat. Life is in the driver's seat through this. Life is living itself through this. To that we add the idea that I'm doing this or I'm doing that, I'm making this happen, I'm keeping that from happening. We add all these different subjective truths. So if, keep it very simple again, what we begin to realize is that the flow of life and the allowance of that flow, the non-interfering with that flow, is what liberates us to act more freely in our life. If we're interested in being creative, you know, with our mind-body process, if we're interested in service, right? If we're interested in giving, if we're interested in exchange with other beings, if we're interested in creative pursuits, the way in which that happens most powerfully is when there is no investment in the goal. It doesn't mean I don't have a goal, but there's no investment. I'm not holding on to it. I'm invested fully in the activity. This is when athletes become very, very athletic and effective. It's when they're immersed there completely. There's an intimacy. This is when the dancer or the musician is fully expressing, the artist is fully expressing, the speaker is expressing. And it's an act, you might say, or manifestation, better, manifestation of intimacy. It's a taste of oneness. It's a taste of wholeness. You know, let me spend a little bit with this. There's awareness, and there's the objects in the field of awareness, like seeing, visual objects, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. And there's something that happens in between the objects and awareness. That's called your thoughts. Okay? Notice your thoughts about what's being said here. Notice your thoughts if you look at other people. The mind spontaneously produces thinking. So I'm just putting my hands like this to say, here's the object. Let's say a tree. And then there's often the word, concept, tree, and then there's awareness. Okay? In witnessing, what happens is you begin to see these things clearly. You begin to see how the eyes work spontaneously, and then how the brain produces thoughts based on sensory contact. At a certain point, as you're settling, and this can happen spontaneously at any moment, the thought dissipates, and there's a direct contact of the awareness with the object. In this case, that which was called tree becomes this actually object, in most cases, of beauty. Nature is incredibly beautiful, and it's even more beautiful when we're not thinking about it. Because then we rest in the wonder of it. Am I making sense? Mm-hmm. Okay. So this isn't to say let's not think, so that this connection between awareness and the objects of the so-called outer world, which isn't really outer, that's just a perception. We think we're in the world, but actually the world is in us. That's a big insight. That's a big thought. Okay. What we think is true, in actuality, is often the opposite. And there's one example of that. Freedom doesn't exist in getting what you want. Freedom exists in choiceless awareness. Freedom doesn't exist in having things the way you want and identifying with things and holding on to things. That's suffering. Freedom exists in choiceless awareness. And that's the nature of awareness. So just notice how awareness is not really moving, right? Because when we say, oh, I moved my awareness, you didn't move your awareness. You moved what you call your attention. I made a choice to listen to that sound out my right ear, and I made a choice to pay attention to this, and I made a choice to get up and eat, and I made a choice to say this. Okay. Awareness is that witnessing just sees these things. It's completely and utterly impartial. And unconditional. You can think that you're conditioning awareness, and this is what thoughts often do, is they condition the witnessing such that I think I'm witnessing. No. Witnessing is just happening. To that I could add the thought that I'm witnessing. Just like I add the thought that I own something, like the tree in my backyard. I don't own the tree in my backyard, even if the paperwork says so. Those are just thoughts on paper. No one owns anything. We're sitting in an experience which is completely and utterly unpossessable. It's like the stars in the night sky. Who owns the stars? No one owns the stars. Guess what? We're sitting on a star. This is a star, the planet Earth. So it's that kind of, you might say, space opens. What happens is this awareness, which seems to be over here, right? Actually, it's everywhere and nowhere specific. This awareness, you might say, and it's really not quite like this, but it's the only way to say it, this awareness and the objects of the so-called world come closer together until they seem to completely... And a thought can still arise, but the thought doesn't disturb. It just goes through. So the tree, so to speak, and awareness go plop. Through what? Through the sense door of, say, seeing. Okay? Or if you go up and you just put your arms around the tree and you really hug the tree and you don't think about anything, there can be a moment of just unicity. Because actually, even though thoughts are happening, and even though thoughts suggest the objects there, awareness is here, the truth is, there's no separation between awareness and any of the objects of experience. And one of the objects of experience is thoughts. There's no separation between awareness and the thoughts. So even though I said, here's the object, say the wall, here's the thought, and here's awareness, there's no separation between these. But in order for that to be realized, there needs to be a certain amount, in most cases, though not all, in most cases, stability within the flow of experience. Otherwise, life becomes herky-jerky. Life becomes a push and pull. And part of the purpose, relatively speaking, of meditation is to reduce and eventually eliminate the tendency to struggle with experience. When the struggle with experience dissipates, then experience can flow more freely. It's not being interfered with. It's not being grasped, resisted. Okay, now, in conclusion for tonight with the talk. All of what I'm pointing at is the nature of insight. It's the nature of becoming awake. It's the nature of becoming clear about what's really happening here. For all of us. As you get closer to yourself, so to speak, you spontaneously get closer to other beings, whether you're physically in their proximity or not. Because if I don't have thoughts about you, whether I quote-unquote know you or not, if I don't have thoughts about you, if the eyes just see you, if the ears just hear you, if the body just feels you, I'm automatically closer to you. Unicity isn't some kind of big, gigantic, boundless amoeba with us all kind of into each other. That's not what it is. It's what's happening here, naturally, spontaneously, when I, quote-unquote, in my brain mind, am not interpreting it. When it's just silently being witnessed. The wholeness or you might say the fullness or the completeness of life, plops forth. And I do mean plop. Plop. It's a trans-rational insight. What is this trans-rational insight? It's an insight that's beyond rationality. What is this insight? The insight is all is well. All is always well. All is never not well. And it transcends the rational mind or intellectual mind's interpretation about what's going on in Afghanistan right now. However, that transrational insight that lets it be known that all is well isn't just the marriage of wisdom and compassion, but that awareness or insight that all is well liberates human beings to relate to that which doesn't seem well much more effectively and freely. Much more effectively and freely. If that's one's calling, to serve or to help. You can't think your way into all as well. You can't imagine your way into all as well. The only way it's realized that all is well is it starts right here and it goes bang out. And it doesn't miss a particle. And it's no joke. It's a trans-rational insight. And in a way, it leaves you, so to speak, free to then respond. You might even say, finally, to freely respond. And what I mean by that is to not be hooked into the results of the actions, but to be fully engaged in the dance of life, in the dance of action, in the dance of doing, without being compulsed and driven to have certain results. And this that I'm describing is what allows results that are wholesome, that are harmonious, and ultimately that are liberating. And you can find this among gardeners. I know of a gardener in the UK, and he understands these things so deeply. And his work, so to speak, is to garden. That's the expression of his trans-rational insight. It's not fair to, it's not even rational to put human beings and say this human being is doing a better job than this human being. We're all the time, doing the best we can. And so that very unfair, pejorative judgment that these people are doing better because they did this and this and this and this, and those people are doing less because of da 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 da. And this whole tendency to create that value assessment, that hierarchy, goes away. And what's left, and I'll conclude with this, what's left is a beautiful, sublime, childlike intimacy that's as simple as looking at a tree and having the thought fall away, and there's just the intimacy that's there. And intimacy means connectedness. Intimacy means non-separation. And that very simple, at times overlooked, connectedness with the tree naturally opens out, fills out, expands out, if you will. It includes all objects. It includes all beings. It's one seamless intimacy. And that's awakening. So